Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode one of season nine of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the Die Hard duo, Die Hard 4 and 5, 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and first of all, I want to thank everyone for coming back for another season of listening to me and my guests talk about the movies in a very minute way. This season, I'm doing things slightly different, as you can tell by the way I started the introduction. I decided that since I didn't want to do Die Hard 4 and 5 1 minute at a time, I decided I'm going to combine them and do a shortened special season, which will have 47 episodes, where I will be joined by guests, and we will talk about both of these movies, Die Hard 4 and 5, 5 minutes at a time. So each episode might be slightly longer, because we're going to be talking about more than just 1 minute each episode, but I still have high hopes that everyone will enjoy and get a lot out of this. This season, we have three segments that will be rotated. So we have there's one that's going to be called Top Cop, another one called Franchise Fever, another one called 6 Degrees of Bruce Willis. Also, every single day, we will have a game called State Your Motto. Once again, as always, I need to start off by thanking those that came before me, all of the people who've, you know, from the Movies by Minute community, going all the way back to Alex and Pete, who started the Star Wars Minute many, many moons ago. Without them starting to get the ball rolling, many of us wouldn't be doing this type of thing, especially not, you know, reaching 9 seasons. I'm also on my way towards 1,100 episodes. I will only get there next season, not this season, because, again, it's a shortened season. But you know, I'm still looking forward to reaching that next milestone. Obviously, I also want to thank all of the other MXMers out there who have been so helpful over the seasons, over the years, giving advice, being part of the Facebook group. You know, whenever I have questions or other people have questions, you know, we all try and help each other as much as possible. So I want to give a shout out to everyone out there from the MXM community. Once again, I want to thank David Brook for doing both the intro and outro of this season, every episode. So thank you very much, David. And obviously, even though he always tells me I don't need to thank him, I want to thank my good friend Jay Cluett from the Deep Blue Sea Pod, who got me started on this thing. And has been going with me, you know, the whole way. You know, he has joined me in the first and last episode of just about every season, except for the first season where things were a little wonky. But he was my first guest on that season. But ever since, he has been the bookend episodes of every one of my seasons. And surprisingly, everyone, I'm sure you're all surprised to know that. Jay is actually also my guest today. So welcome back to the show for yet another beginning of another season, Jay.
Listening to you praise me, it just sounds like having a pine cone shoved up my ass. You're welcome, Rob. Thrilled to be back here. Let's see, listeners can enjoy my sexy voice one more time, or three more times, 8 more times across the season. I forget how many episodes I'm doing this season. Happy to have convinced you to cover 4 and 5 and not just discard them from the franchise. I feel like there's enough here to talk about to warrant covering them in this truncated fashion. So I'm glad your arm was twisted.
Yes. I do appreciate the input and the advice, and you're right. You are the one who pushed me towards doing it instead of just doing one episode of each of them. And I liked the idea and decided that it would be a great way to do it. So thank you for that input.
You're welcome.
You know, that's why I always throw these things at you just to get your opinion. You've been very helpful throughout all of the seasons with a lot of different things that have helped me along the way. So you're a great sounding board. So thank you very much.
Hey, happy to help.
Okay. All right. So let us begin this season as we always begin it. You know, the movie that we are going to be doing is Live Free or Die Hard.
It's not how I know it.
Which is also known as Die Hard 4.0. Thank you. and also Die Hard 4. It depends on where you look at it and where you're coming from. I know that, you know, in England, it's known as Die Hard 4.0. Do you think that Die Hard 4.0 is a better title than Live Free or Die Hard?
Absolutely. I think Live Free or Die Hard is not a good title. I know this to start with, it doesn't start with Die Hard. All the Die Hard films should start with Die Hard at the title, because when you have them on your shelf, alphabetically, they're all together.
We have a few weeks till we get to number 5, but you do realize that number 5 also doesn't start off with the...
That's the only thing wrong with A Good Day to Die Hard is the title. No. I haven't seen that since... A Good Day to Die Hard, I've seen one time when it first came out on streaming.
Okay.
And so I'm intrigued to go back to it.
Okay, well, you'll be able to cover, 20 minutes of the movie? So, or
yes,
anywhere between 15 and 20 minutes. It depends on
how long that
episode is. Yeah, exactly. But
yippee-ki-yay, Mother Russia.
There you go.
Looking forward to it. but I think Live Free or Die Hard, I don't like it as a title. It invokes too much Americana for me. I know that this is an American franchise. It's set in America. This is particularly... across the Eastern Seaboard, kind of American film, but it's enjoyed outside of America. The first three Die Hard films don't kind of invoke that gung-ho, yee-haw kind of approach, but Live Free or Die Hard feels like a very American saying.
Okay.
And I feel like it's taking the film away from the rest of the world a little bit.
Understandable.
The bad guy in this one is American, which wasn't the case for two of the previous ones.
That's correct.
So this feels odd, like an American versus American film.
Because there's
like an American slogan. Sorry?
Because there's no Groovers here.
Sure, indeed.
Yeah.
That we know.
No, I understand. That's fair. Do you know why it's where the phrase Live Free or Die Hard comes from?
I do not.
So the term Live Free or Die is actually the state motto of New Hampshire.
Okay.
All right.
And where does it come from? Why did they pick it?
Is that what you really want to know?
Sure.
Well, First of all, you know, that part of my problem with it being known as Live Free or Die Hard is that, you know, if it were to have taken place in New Hampshire, it would make more sense, you know, from that.
But it doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, it takes place near, just in the grand scheme of things.
Right.
It's like that side of the country.
Correct. It's pretty much the most well-known of all the state mottos, because it conveys a history from an American political philosophy. The phrase originally came from a soldier from the American Revolutionary War, General John Stark, who was from New Hampshire. Basically, he sent a toast to a reunion that he was invited to that he couldn't make it. And the toast was, live free or die, death is not the worst of evil.
Okay, sure.
It also is a phrase that was used during the French Revolution. Obviously, they didn't say live free or die. They said, vive liberi o morir, or something to that.
You mean liberty could be death?
Maybe. That, you know, that was the oath of office that the new people after the French Revolution had to swear by in order to, you know, be a part of the new French government after 1791. I mean, we do have the line from Patrick Henry, from 1775, you know, where he did say, is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death. You know, so basically that's why that's why they chose it as it. So again, I agree with you that Die Hard 4.0 fits in much better with the theme of this movie. You know, as we will begin talking about shortly, you know, so it sort of makes sense from that perspective. But you see, from the way I look at it, you know, because you and I have discussed this often, you know, I'm a big fan of the Die Hard trilogy, and then we have these two other movies, you know, so, you know, the fact that 4 and 5 don't start with Die Hard doesn't bother me as much from that perspective, because to me, they're appendices. 4 is much better than 5, and we will be discussing it over the next, I think, 7.5 or 8 weeks, or no, 5 weeks. Next 5 weeks, we will be talking about this one. So, you know, I can you know, I look at it from that perspective. But it doesn't matter. You and I didn't get to choose what the name of the movie is. You know, it was the producers who decided whether they were going to call it Live Free or Die Hard. But obviously, when they were trying to market it outside of America, they said, okay, no one's going to know what the hell Live Free or Die Hard is. So why don't we just call it Die Hard 4.0?
I remember when this film was announced in like a film magazine. I was at university, and one of my coursemates was like, they're making a new Die Hard film. I said, oh, great. Because like, Die Hard with a Vengeance is incredible. Let's make another one of those. And it was like, and he paused, he kind of scrolled down. And it's called Live Free or Die Hard? And we all just fell about laughing at how silly of a title that was.
Well, that's just
stuck with me.
You know, you didn't know what Live Free or Die Hard meant. So, you know, I can understand.
Sure.
I can understand that. Okay, so the movie came out in 2007, and it was released on June 26th, 2007. And the movie is 2 hours and 8 minutes long. And how much, what do you think the budget was for this movie?
I'm very bad at that kind of thing. $120 million?
Very close, $110 million.
Okay, great.
Okay, and how much do you think it earned first domestically in America, and how much internationally? And then together worldwide.
You have to separate.
Of course, I always have to separate it because, you know.
But no, I don't know why people measure it that way. I want to just do global. Well, just do international. Why do you have to look? This is how much it made in our one country. Yes. This is how much it made in the rest of the world. Why not just?
Okay, but when we're gonna deal with the weekend tallies and stuff like that, those are, I'm just gonna be going with the American one. So,
yeah it's stupid. this is a bugbear of mine across all different kind of podcasts. Like, this is how much it made in America. It's like, well, who cares? What about the rest of the world? Does their money not count? Domestically, I'll say it made $200 million, and then internationally, hooray, an additional $150, so $350 total. This is all complete.
Okay, well, first of all, you sort of mixed up between the domestic and international, but your total, the worldwide right. total, you're close with. So the domestic total was $134,000. The international total was $254,000, and then so the worldwide total was $388,000. Okay, so yeah, exactly. You're in the right you're in the right ballpark. Okay. So when it came out, you know, in the middle of the week on you know, June 26th, and the weekend was June 29th, so therefore it came out on a Wednesday. So that weekend, June 29th through July 1st, 2007. Where do you think it debuted in the top 10 in the American box office?
I imagine it was number one. And, being a new Die Hard
film. And you would be incorrect.
Okay. I guess it depends on what else came out, and I don't know what else came out that weekend.
Well, I know it's a movie that you love.
See, I don't know if you're being facetious.
I'm being serious. I'm being serious here.
A movie I love from 2007. Yes.
Huh. Besides Dinosaurs and Sharks, what is Jay Clewitt's favorite genre of films?
Besides Dinosaurs, this was before any Lego movies. Are we talking Pixar? Are we talking Ratatouille? Yes,
very good. You see?
Yeah.
Okay. And I know that you're a big fan of Ratatouille, so there you go.
Yes, and I saw Ratatouille in the cinema. I didn't see Die Hard 4.0.
Because you missed it because it was listed as Die Hard, Live Free or Die Hard. You know, like, that's not Die Hard 4.0. Sure. Okay, so Ratatouille debuted at number one that year, that week, at $47 million the opening weekend. And Live Free or Die Hard, how much do you think it brought in on that weekend? Because it was number two.
33.
Okay. In addition, so number three that year, number three that weekend was Evan Almighty. Four was 1408. Five was The Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer. Six was Knocked Up. Seven, Ocean's 13. Eight, Pirates of the Caribbean at World's End. Nine, Sicko. And 10, Evening.
A truly stellar week exactly. for cinema.
Okay, so the following week, so the weekend of July 6th through the 8th, 2007. What do you think happened with Die Hard 4.0? Did it move up or down?
Well, did we have any
there were two
standout
there were
new
two
releases?
New releases. One of them is definitely standout and one of them is not.
Okay, in which case, I reckon Die Hard 4.0 dropped a rank.
It dropped to number three.
Hey.
You were correct. So that weekend, Transformers debuted. 70 okay. million.
I did see that.
You did
actually.
Or did not?
Yeah, I did see that in cinema.
All right, so Transformers.
No. I feel bad about that.
Why, you're not a fan of it?
No, they're all bad films. The first one's the best one.
Okay.
Bad films.
But it's still fun. That's it. So, yes, Transformers debuted with $70 million that weekend. And then Ratatouille. Live Free or Die Hard. Ratatouille had $29 million and Live Free or Die Hard had $17 million. And then number four was a new movie called License to Wed. If I remember correctly, that's a Robin Williams. That's a Robin Williams movie.
Yeah.
Which made...
Yeah, Jason Biggs and Isla
Fisher. I believe so, yeah. That made $10
million. I've seen that.
And then the rest of the top 10 are also from the movies that we mentioned the previous week. All right, week number three. Well, actually, before I start that, how many weeks do you think Die Hard 4.0 stayed in the top 10?
No, it's at least two. Probably at least three. I'm going to say six.
By the sixth week, it was no longer in the top 10.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So the third weekend that after it debuted, July 13th through the 15th, 2007, there was one new... movie debut, another big one. So where do you think Live Free or Die Hard went?
Maybe it's dropped down to number four.
That is correct. Okay. That weekend, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix came out. There's another one you probably saw.
I have seen that one. Yes. I don't know if I saw that one in the cinema. But I have definitely seen it.
So Harry Potter 5 made $77 million on its debut weekend. Transformers number two with 37, Ratatouille number three with 18, and then Live Free or Die Hard with 11. And then again, the rest of it is all things from the previous one. All right, week number four, July 20th to the 22nd, there was another debut. There were two debuts that weekend. What do you think happened there?
I think it went down to number six.
It definitely went down to number six. Yes. Okay, but I'm actually surprised by the two that actually debuted that week, because you have I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, which was an Adam Sandler movie.
Kevin James, yeah.
And then Harry Potter was number two. Number three was Hairspray, which debuted then. I don't think I've ever seen that one. I have no desire to either.
I have seen that one. I haven't seen Chuck and Larry, but I have seen the Hairspray remake. It's fine.
Transformers dropped down to four, Ratatouille 5, and then Live Free or Die Hard dropped down to number six. So then the following weekend, the final weekend that it remained in the top 10, where do you think it was? There were
four new releases
that week.
So it was number six. So I'm guessing it's nine
it's
or ten.
It's actually number eight.
It's barely hanging
eight.
On.
The movies that debuted that week were The Simpsons Movie, No Reservations, I Know Who Killed Me, and Who's Your Caddy.
Classics.
I think
all
The Simpsons Movie is the only one I've seen of all this. I don't even know what No Reservations is. No clue.
Another Reservations is, I believe, a kitchen-based romantic drama with Catherine Zeta-Jones and Aaron Eckhart.
Ah, so maybe I did see it.
I think.
Okay. Right, so Simpsons...
I'm just going to have to check. Okay. Yes, it is. Great. I haven't seen it.
Simpsons debuted at number one, and then I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, followed by Harry Potter, followed by Hairspray, No Reservations, Transformers, Ratatouille, and then Live Free or Die Hard, which made only $5 million that week before getting basically... bumped out of the top 10, within 6 weeks, which is not very good for a Die Hard movie. Because if I remember correctly, and I could be wrong.
Sure, it's better than five.
Probably. We'll find that out in in 25 episodes, 26 episodes, sorry. And yeah, well, we'll have to wait and see what happens there. That Die Hard 5 is actually the only one I've never seen. I've never seen in the theater, and I'm very glad I didn't.
I haven't seen any of them. I've yet to see a Die Hard film in the cinema.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Oh, actually, now that I think about it, the original Die Hard I never saw in the theater either. So, okay. So I saw 2 twice. I saw 3 once, 4 once. That's it. So I sort of made up for the fact that, that I didn't see the first one by seeing the second one twice. Okay. So that's the way that this movie debuted and made money. I mean, it did make money. You know, I'm very interested in seeing in 5 weeks from now whether a Good Day to Die Hard made money also or not. I don't know the answer. So
we'll find out together.
Well, I'll find out slightly before what I do my research, but yeah, we will discuss it together.
The listeners and I will find out together unless they Google it between now and that episode coming out. Either way, we'll find out soon.
That is true. Okay, so let us start talking about this movie. Okay. Because, again, we have 5 minutes to go through.
Sure.
Okay. So this movie, I actually really enjoy the opening of this movie because of the way that they do the glitching. Exactly. It's just great. It makes a lot of sense. I mean, I just heard something recently. I'm trying to remember where I heard it, where there was a time when you couldn't touch the logos of companies, in the movies. It needed to be exactly the way that it was presented, and you couldn't play around with it. Like, you couldn't do the glitches, or you couldn't change the color, or different things that they've done, over the years. And, this movie, they said, okay, we're gonna change it. And I do like the way that they did it. Just having the little bit of glitching on it, especially when you're watching this movie and you've never seen it and you're not really sure why this is happening. If you've seen it, you understand the reference. But
And watching it in retrospect, if you're watching it on a laptop, like I am, all of the hackers, they get little glitch in their screen, and then they blow up and die. And so if you're watching this on a laptop, you're thinking, like, wait a minute, has a virus and a bomb just been planted? I'm not going to press the delete key anytime soon.
We're going to get there.
Just in case. This film's trying to kill me.
Then, we start off with the 20th Century Fox Presents logo, and we see that someone's in an office, a very big office with lots of computers around and stuff like that. And we see one guy there who's dealing with, he's doing something. We know he's a hacker. Just staying late at work, hacking into something.
I think it was a library, like a college. You think it was a library?
Yeah.
Well, because of the layout of the desks and the computers and everything, it feels like a big communal space rather than an office. But I feel like this guy's maybe staying late at university or college to do some hacking, not on his own connection, right, and then heading back.
Okay.
Back to his place to be painted on his own walls.
I didn't think about that, but yeah, makes a lot of sense. And we're shown his computer, and where we get to see a lot of tech stuff. You probably understand the programming a little bit better than I would.
I doubt that. I took computing for maybe like 3 weeks in college, and I don't want to do this anymore, and so I stopped.
That's 3 weeks more than me.
So no.
So there you go.
Okay.
And basically, we get to see different things on the screen. We see a map of the U.S. Where the Eastern Seaboard is lit up, and then we get the credit of Bruce Willis. I don't know who that guy is, and the way they also change change the letters also looks very cool. It also looks like it's computerized glitching and stuff like that. And then we're back to this guy, you know, at the computer, and we hear a voice say to him, "Well," and then he goes, "I'm sending you the code." "Yes, I can see that. Thank you." And, you know, we see Maggie Q, and we see also that it says 99% transferred, 100% transferred. And then we get a little look at a list or a database on her, you know, on her computer, basically, which shows a list of names, and then it says either delivered or assigned, and then we have different places: Federal Reserve, NYSE, and NASDAQ, which is the is Wall Street, National Power Grid, National Water Supply, Natural Gas Pipeline System, FBI. You know, and it's she has a pretty good database here of how she's, you know, she filled out a nice Excel file with you know, with all the names of these hackers that they're going to be using. And we see that she changes by his name. It goes from, you know, we have Ken Terry. So it said assigned, and then it quickly switches to delivered. So now we know this guy is Ken Terry.
Yeah, who I could not find on the credits.
I looked up a lot of these names and couldn't find any of them in the credits. So I gave up after a few of them, because I guess it's not something that, you know, it must be just friends of people. That would have been it. You know, not necessarily someone, you know, back with Saving Private Ryan, when we were dealing with that, you know, when Ryben's throwing out all these names, you know, they're actually all friends of Ed Burns. They're not in the script. They're not people who worked on the movie, you know, so makes sense. Yeah. Then,
We had that with Con Air, where three of the guys were named after the camera operators. And there was a fourth camera operator who did not get credited, named. The other three did, but not him.
Well, we had it also in Die Hard. They had the you know, a sign of who built the Nakatomi Building, and there were all the people on the production crew. You know, so you know, you get the, and don't forget all the people, you know, in on the you know, when Gruber's on the top floor and he's looking at all the people and the names in the building. Most of those people are also people from the production, except for William Clay, Bill Clay. And then we get the title of this movie, which depending on the version that you use, it will either say Die Hard 4.0 or Live Free or Die Hard. On the version that both Jay and I, the version that I have that I shared with Jay, it says Die Hard 4.0. So I don't know if you use the one I sent you.
My version has Die Hard 4. I watched my DVD. Okay. It has Die Hard 4.0 on it as well.
And then it's like deleted as if it's on a computer screen. But again, it's a, you know, you see the green glowing on the computer screen, which is, you know, something from a long time ago. I don't know if computer programmers still all see, you know, green lettering when they're typing stuff. That I don't know. I know that back when
just in the Matrix, I think just in the Matrix.
Who knows? And then we're back in this, I guess, public area, but we see all of the computers are now on, and there are other people around. Actually, you see people in the back. This, you're right. This does look like it must be a library, but why would they let him bring a big cup of coffee into there?
It's like a student library, like a bunch of. You're going to be in there for hours doing work at my university library. You could take food in there. Yeah, I mean, they changed it after a while, after we found out the code to the lecturer's canteen and started taking like lasagna and stuff and heating it up. They then banned food from the CAD labs, but that's fine. It's fine as long as you don't, you know, take the mic a little bit.
Okay. Makes sense.
Don't abuse the system.
Last time I was in a library using a computer, or actually I can't even remember last time I was in the library, because if I want to read something I do in my office, I don't need to go to the library to do it, you know. And then he goes, "What about my account?" And she goes, then we hear Maggie Q say back, "Delivering. I just sent it. You should have it." And then the screen glitches again. And we briefly see something else on the screen computer-wise, and then we get the name of the credit of Justin Long, we will talk about much later in the second, because the next scene shows him. He's typing.
Much later.
Much, much later. So we see also another computer screen with him typing. And then we get the credit of Timothy Oliphant, who we will talk about much later. Credit of Cliff Kirk.
Yeah, Timothy Oliphant, not in my chapters, which is a shame, because I love Timothy Oliphant.
Sorry.
All right, it's fine. You don't control these things. So I just want to give a little bit of praise to him whilst he's come up now, in that he's great. I love him. In most things, I think he is not used well here. Timothy Oliphant has his two weapons that he should use to the fullest of his ability. He's a very incredibly charming guy. So charming, and he's playing one of the least charming people in this film. He gets to use it a little bit, talking to Meredith with Winston over the phone, but not for very long. Just not very charming. And his second greatest aspect is his hair. Timothy Oliphant has some of the best hair in the business. It's glorious. Watch him in The Mandalorian, when he's in that, a couple of episodes he's in there. It's just the most glorious hair in the world. And so many shots of Die Hard 4.0, you're locked into his face and the top of the screen is like half an inch below his hairline and you just see his face and I'm thinking this is unbearable. And then when it pans out, he's got a shaved head pretty much. It's like real close cropped. I'm like, what are they doing? They're throwing it away. It's gonna be so great. So yeah, that's my biggest problems with this film. Is how they underuse Timothy Oliphant and his glorious hair.
Then we get another shot on the screen where it says algorithm, and this is access granted. And then we get Maggie Q's credit, followed by Mary Elizabeth Winston's credit, and then once again we see Matthew Farrell, you know, played by Justin Long, and we hear him say, "I just sent it. You should have it." And Maggie Q responds and says, "Yes, thank you." And then he asks a really, really strange question. He goes, "Are you sure this is legal?" Now, I gotta tell you, if you're a hacker and you're asking a question like that, something's a little off here.
I mean, you're asking it too late. Yeah. We've already done it. This is something you asked earlier in the process.
Exactly. And then
was this legal? Past tense. Deed is done.
And you just sent it to her. So there you go. Now it's, you know, it's
but she's like, "Oh, you're right. This isn't legal. It's okay, we won't pay you."
That's right. But let's just delete what I just said. You know, don't pay attention to that. Then we get another shot of her database and we see the name Matthew Farrell. It says delivered. We see security something. You can't really tell what he's dealing with there. And then the name below it really jumped out at me. Joseph Velvic with an H-V-E-L-V-I-C. And I was like, oh, wow. That is definitely someone who's in the credits. And
no,
it's not. So again, because it looks like one of those names that, you know.
Icelandic or somewhere around that region. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And then Maggie Q gets ready to respond. And as she's getting ready to respond, we get a Kevin Smith credit on screen.
Well, much more lines in this film, but I do enjoy his scenes.
Yeah.
I'm not a Kevin Smith hater. And if you haven't watched The Audience with Kevin Smith, 4-hour stand-ups that he's done, I'd recommend them as research for this season, because he does go into his work with Bruce Willis in Cop Out. In at least one of them.
Interesting.
Okay. There's two Audience with Kevin Smiths.
I will have to look for that.
I can't remember which one. He also talks a lot about Tim Burton and making Wild Wild West, which he did not make, but he did a script on it, I think.
Interesting.
They're very entertaining.
No, but didn't he write a Superman script that Tim Burton was going to use?
Yes, and the ending for that one became the ending of Wild Wild West.
Ah, okay.
Basically, a film that Kevin Smith, neither him nor Tim Burton were involved with. Right. I believe it has the same producer.
Exactly. And then she responds to him, we're just running a test on our security system. It's fine. Which, again, I don't really know if you would, you know, if he's supposed to believe that. You know, is this really like an internal review?
Yeah, and if and 50 grand, which is what the other guy is getting paid, seems a lot of money to spend for this kind of test.
Well, if it is the government, then I wouldn't be surprised that they would give that much money for it.
I would be very surprised that the government handing out that much money. The government likes to keep it. Let's take it away.
Haven't you been paying attention over the last few months of all the things that Doge has found? So,
no, I haven't. I don't care about that kind of stuff.
But that's a separate issue. And then he pops open what looks like a Red Bull or something like that. You know, and then... And then he says, wow, you've got a sexy voice. Is there anything that I can do for you? To you?
My next issue with this film is the character of Matt Ferrell.
Yeah.
I think if you were to stack up all of John McClane's buddies in these buddy cop films, he is the least competent, I would say, across the board. Of all of them, he is. I compare him to Willie Scott from Temple of Doom, in that he spends the whole film wanting the film not to be happening.
Right. Okay.
Which, to be fair, Sam Jackson does a little bit in Die Hard with a Vengeance, but in that instance, you've got Sam Jackson playing him, who is entertaining, and nothing against Justin Long. He's good in some other stuff. He's no Samuel L. Jackson.
Okay.
So I'm always going to hold that against him.
Well, what can you do?
Eat Samuel L. Jackson. Or just hire him again. He can become a hacker now. Aldous Hodge has become a hacker. And Sam Jackson's there to help.
Maybe. Now there's if you pause at second 1 minute and 30 seconds, you can see behind him there's like someone on a like chat screen where you can see a person. You know, which you think is really strange, because if he's, you know, doing some secret illegal stuff, he wouldn't necessarily want to have someone looking over his shoulder, and unless he's watching a movie or something as it's happening.
You know. It looks like a static image. I don't think the person's moving. So pass. I don't know. I've never hacked. I don't know the protocol. But yeah, I would say it's probably not a live feed of another person watching him hack. That would be a mistake.
Yeah. Okay. And then Maggie Q responds, we have all we need. Which I guess is a good way to shut him down.
No so way.
I'm going to like that. And then you know, we get more credits for some of the other supporting cast. And then the screen starts panning down the list of all the names of all these hackers, where it says delivered, you know, all the different names. And then someone says to her, we're ready. Sorry. Then she says to someone else, we're ready. And then you know, we get more glitches. And then the scene changes, and we get to see a house from afar, you know, like on a crane shot. You know, who's in this house? And then the next shot shows someone shooting, and then you can find out that it's someone in a first player shooter. I don't know enough about these things to try and figure out what game this is.
My guess is Call of Duty, but I can't say for definite. It's not an area of my expertise either.
Right. Yeah. So we see that there's a guy playing on a game, and then someone else walks into the room.
Oh, it's Gears of War. It says on IMDb it's Gears of War. Gears 2006.
Okay, fair enough. So then the second guy walks into the room and goes, yo, guess who just made 50 G's today? And, you know, the gamer who's with him just ignores him, basically, as he, you know, it sort of interrupts him in the middle of his, you know, he bats him on the shoulder and then walks right in front of him, you know, which in a shooting game, in a first-player shooter, you probably don't want someone doing that.
Definitely not. Any kind of game. Anything that's like, need a quick response.
Correct. And then the guy sits down at the computer, starts typing stuff in. We see some glitches on his computer. And, you know, he just starts tapping the space bar a little bit. And then he goes, what'd you do to my drive? And the response is, I didn't touch it. This isn't cool. Don't ever, ever touch my computer. And
I get the feeling that the people who wrote this film weren't like au fait with computers as much as they maybe should have been.
That's right.
A friend of mine is far more technology minded than anyone else I know, and he gave me his copy of this film because he didn't want it anymore because it angered him so much. Basically,
it's nice to have friends who don't like particular movies and are willing to give them to you for free.
Absolutely.
And then for some reason, this guy just presses his delete key.
Yes, now, sure. Escape, the far more obvious answer, but there we go.
I've been using computers for probably over 30 years, okay? And, you know, I'm not a hacker, but I know that if I have a problem with the computer, the only time I will press the delete button is when I'm pressing it along with the Control-Alt.
Yes, sure. And the delete key... one of the few keys on the keyboard where there is an alternate you can use instead, the backspace. So that I know my wife never presses the delete key, she presses the backspace key. And so if it was her computer, it would still be going today.
That's right.
Madness. That's the key to press.
Quite understand why he presses the delete key. And then
escape, enter, space, anything else.
That's right. So I guess that means we're in good shape, that we're not going to have to worry about pressing the delete key and having what happens to this guy happen to us.
Sure. Then I'm also not going to hack stuff for the government, just as a rule, I think.
No. And then we get a quick shot of some C4 explosives, and the light goes from green to red. And then
the house goes from up to down.
I mean, they blew away this house. I mean, even the pillars in the front of the house, that's overkill.
Yes. Listeners, bear in mind the size of this explosion until later this week. Just keep this in mind, that this is how big this explosion is.
That's right.
Just keep, visualize it in your head.
Yes. And then we...
Unsurvivable.
Completely unsurvivable. And then we see another shot of the building as it's burning, and then a mysterious black van drives away. That's right. Then we get more shots of this database, and we see that everything is starting to change to deactivated, you know, from all the delivered people. We see little by little they're all deactivated except for Matthew Farrell. You know, even Joseph Hedelvik is gone.
sadly, no longer with us. He has been deactivated. A great term to use. Right. How can we say we killed someone with tech speak?
And then we get a shot of a computer area. We see some hackers that are working there with Maggie Q. They're all in the same area. And she starts typing some stuff in. And we see that she gets into the FBI login access, a remote connection. And we get a shot of Washington, D.C. at night.
Well, one of the hackers is a guy called Andrew Friedman, I want to say. Plays Casper. Andrew Friedman, he's a great sitcom guy. He plays Charlie's uncle in Always Sunny. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and he's plays like a gamer in Mythic Quest. He's good at playing creepy guys. Guys are a little bit creepy. He's got that kind of face.
Maybe they just wanted to kill him.
Maybe. So I just sort of like, I recognize. What do I recognize you from? So, oh, you're a creepy guy. Great, creepy guy. Shout out to Andrew Friedman.
Shout out to creepy guy. Okay, makes sense. And, you know, we could see Washington tonight, and then we're inside the FBI Cybersecurity Division, Washington, D.C., where, you know, it's a big area with a whole bunch of computers on desks and a whole bunch of screens up on top, you know, making it look very, very busy. with everything that they're doing here. And then they give us more shots of Maggie Q typing into her computer. And then we start seeing all of the screens in this FBI cybersecurity division just go out for a second. And people are very confused, trying to figure out what's going on, looking around.
Let's say the fatal drinking game for Die Hard 4.0 is drink every time somebody looks at a screen.
Yeah, there you go.
You're not going to survive.
That's right. And people are, you know, trying to figure out what's going on. And then the computer's all gone back on. And, you know, they're all still a little bit confused.
Still looking at the screens.
That's right. And then the shot changes, and we actually will now get Bowman.
Cliff Curtis. Rare Cliff Curtis on land film. He loves very being true. On the water. Not in this film. This film, he's landlocked. That's why he's so annoyed and frustrated all the time.
One of the people working with him comes up behind him and goes, diagnostics show no damage, but this was an intentional breach.
Sure. Hey, but all of our screens went out and then came back on, flickering. Are you sure?
Yeah, these people are really smart. And he goes, we were hacked. And the response is, it wasn't denial of service level, but they definitely cracked our door. Okay, now, do you know what a denial of service attack is?
I don't know anything you just said, Rob. So no. No, I do not.
Okay. So a denial of service attack is a cyber attack in which the perpetrator seeks to make a machine or network resource unavailable to its intended users by temporarily or indefinitely disrupting services of a host connected to a network.
Makes sense.
Okay. Which basically means that they, you know, they lock you out that you can't get it.
Sure.
So it's great that she says it wasn't a denial of service level because we're still able to get into the computers. So,
yeah. So what was it? That's something else.
Yeah. I mean, I found a list of like 20 different types of attacks, but you know, and people are going to hear me say this a lot over this season, but because we're not doing this minute by minute and we're doing it 5 minutes, I'm not going to go through all the 20 different types of denial of service attacks that one could have.
On behalf of the listeners, thank you.
Hey, well, you have to thank Jay for telling me not to do this.
On behalf of the listeners, you're welcome. To all the listeners, you're welcome.
That's right.
Feel free to research these on your own time.
And then the response is, okay, open the Black Hat files. Now, do you know what a Black Hat is?
I haven't seen the Michael Mann, Chris Hemsworth film Black Hat. I know it did far worse at the box office than this one did. But a Black Hat, I've seen Westworld. There's Black Hats and White Hats, and they're both kind of hackers, and Black Hats are bad guys, and White Hats are good guys. So the Black Hat file, I'm going to guess, is a file, a physical or digital file with a list of people who are bad hackers, bad guy hackers.
That's
people
right.
That have been arrested for hacking of some kind.
Correct. So a Black Hat is a computer hacker who violates laws or ethical standards for nefarious purposes, such as cyber crimes, cyber warfare, or any other types of malice. These acts can range from piracy to identity theft. A Black Hat is often referred to as a cracker. The term...
Because that's normally a term for a white person. A Black Hat. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah, it makes you think a lot.
And so the term originated in the 1950s from Westerns, where the bad guys were typically depicted in black hats and the good guys wore white hats.
And in like Psycho, when Janet Leigh is stealing the money, she's wearing a black bra, and when she's not, she's wearing a white bra. that terminology didn't stick,
right? They also have gray hat hacking, which are individuals who hack usually with good intentions, but by illegal means.
Okay. Or vice versa, with bad intentions, but with illegal means?
No, meaning that I don't know, maybe it's just all the pirates out there. Right. Interesting. And then Bowen says, I want every hacker in the country who could have done this interview now. Sir, that's close to 1,000 names. This holiday weekend, we're short-staffed as it is. We're the ones supposed to keep this from happening, and it happened to us. Do it. Sir, it's night. They're all over the country. Get local law enforcement help. Somebody out there thinks they can screw with us. I want to find out who.
Think of the logistics of this.
Yeah.
They said 1,000 names. So across the country, I don't know how, I don't know the population distribution of hackers, but let's say 1,000 different cities or towns. Each one of them now has a cop going to pick up a hacker. That's so much to orchestrate, let alone do. Like, who's got the list of 1,000? So you have one person with 1,000. They're going to give 100 different people 10 names. And then, this is maddening to think about someone trying to do on, what is this, like the 2nd of July? The 3rd? I don't know what day it is. This is the 4th of July weekend, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just so much work to do.
Yes. If the FBI can send out other people to go do it, so why not?
I get if they knew that like 999 people, these people are dead, there's just one guy left. Well, okay, fine. Let's just go get that one guy. But this is a real like, so there's one guy who didn't die, and Joel McClane's the one guy to go and get him. It's like, yeah, sure, fine. I'm okay with that. But I kind of want to cut to Sun Kang in the back room and be like, oh, 738 names to still send out to police chiefs across the country. Here we go. Give me another coffee.
Yeah, but, you know, also they're going to start going through this list and realize, wait a second, you know, there were 500 explosions.
And it's the same addresses as these people? Wait, this can't possibly be related.
No, pure coincidence.
Pure coincidence.
Pure coincidence. Then the scene changes, and we are on a college campus, and we see a couple making out inside of a car, and you know the guy is trying to overreach a little bit, and the girl keeps trying to stop him, and then they give us a great shot from outside, you know, where it looks like someone is like paparazzi filming it because of the way the camera moves back and forth, you know, in a very shaky way, but you know, knowing that basically it's you know, John McClane is looking at them. It could potentially be that John McClane is has been drinking, because it keeps moving in a very strange way back and forth. You know, looking at this car.
Maybe drinking. Maybe he's like shaking with rage. Maybe what's happening inside could the be. Car.
Right, and then the woman decides that she goes, Jim, I said no. He goes, Lucy, you're killing me already. Grabs his hand and moves him away, and then. You know, we get a shot from outside of the car where someone comes and opens the door and then screams at him, get out. The guy looks at him and goes, what? Get out of the car now. Then we get to see that it's John McClane who grabs the guy by the collar and pulls him out. He goes, don't touch me. You know, you'd think that the next thing the guy would say is, I'm going to file charges.
He doesn't know he's a cop yet.
No. The kid will say that he's going to file charges because he's manhandling him.
But would he say that to just a random stranger? I imagine he would say that to a police officer.
No.
Because, like, no?
No, because he would say, I'm going to file charges of assault or whatever it is. I don't know.
Oh, I you're from a far more litigious country than I am, so I don't understand these kinds of things. If I was in Jim's position, I would understand it as, I was doing a bad thing. This is right, what is happening to me now.
Probably not, Jay, but okay. And then no means no.
Sure does.
Great John McClane line. And then you know, the girl gets out of the car and goes, what are you doing? John, stop it. Don't call me that. I hate it when you do that. And then Jim looks at her and goes, you know this guy? Shut your mouth right now. Dad, stop it. I mean it. Dad? You said your dad was dead. What?
She really has to summon that dad from inside of her. It's I love Mary Elizabeth Winstead. We'll talk about more of that tomorrow.
You told this jerk off I was dead? You actually said that? I may have exaggerated a little bit. And this guy's what? Your boyfriend? No. And I love how Jim says, yeah.
Yeah. I really like this interaction. I think this is good, this scene. I think this is a good establishing of the Lucy-John relationship. This Jim guy adds a nice comedy in there. He continues that tomorrow. I appreciate this sequence. I think it's well done.
And then she goes, I don't know. Okay. I'm sorry. We'll see.
And we did briefly skip over the Rock and Roll Queen by the Subways, a band I have seen live. So just wanted to mention that I've seen very few bands live, but the Subways I've seen.
Okay. Did you want to say anything about the band?
It's a good song. I like the song. That's all I had. I'm trying to pick out good things when I find them. Like, I like this song.
Fair enough. And then she turns to him and goes, what are you doing here? And then he says, you don't answer your... And then he gets cut off. And you know, we've made it through 5 minutes.
Made it through 5 minutes. It took 3 hours. Hmm. It's going to be heavily edited down, but we made it.
Yes. But I agree with you. I like the interaction here. I think it's done really well. The way that they're, you know, they're helping us understand, you know, that not only does John have issues with his wife, but he now has issues with his daughter.
John McClane, bad at family. Is a key personality trait.
That is very true.
We don't seem like hang out with friends either. It's just like bad at people, I guess.
Well, we know. The only friend that he's got is Al Powell, and he's back in L.A. So
yeah, and who knows if he still speaks to him?
That's right. Well, he's probably upset that he's no longer around. You know, you never call. You never call to get fingerprints of dead guys.
One time you did that. I'm still here, John. I'm waiting by the fax machine. 2007.
Are you pissing in someone else's pool? It's been 17 years.
At least he's back to pissing in his own pool now, I guess.
That's true. Well, sort of. Yeah. We'll find out tomorrow about that one. But who knows? So, did you have anything else you wanted to say about these 5 minutes, Jay?
No, I think we covered it. Zelko Ivanek was the other police officer, one of the other of Cliff Curtis's crew, who's also a great one of those guys, one of those faces.
He's one of those guys that's in all of these movies. You know, you've seen him so many times in movies.
Yeah. I'm not as familiar with Christina Chang, but she is in The Good Doctor, a show my wife watches, and apparently is good in that. So.
Okay, nope, not familiar with her at all.
Yeah.
Okay, so as I mentioned at the beginning of this episode, because my guests are all going to be on just for three segments at a time, so the segments won't be connected directly to a day. They will be connected to the first episode they're on, the second episode they're on, and the third episode they're on. So the segment that we're going to do for the first episode that Jay is on is called Top Cop, where my guests will give their top five film detectives or policemen. So Jay, why don't you start off with your number five and work your way up?
As always, a very difficult list to compile. These things aren't supposed to be easy, I know. So I've got a bunch of honorable mentions, which I'll run through some of those afterwards, I guess. Number five, if I can put Michael Shannon on a list, I will, is a rule of life. So I don't much enjoy Premium Rush as a film, but I enjoyed his Bobby Monday as the bad guy police officer trying to justifiably kill Joseph Gordon-Levitt's awful cyclist. I am a cyclist, I can say this. Jogo is a terrible cyclist in that film. But if you give me Michael Shannon chewing some scenery being a bad guy, he'll crop up on my list somewhere. So he's number five. I do not expect anybody else to even think about putting him on the list. That's fine. Number four, a film I believe maybe in your future on this podcast is Alonzo Mosley from Midnight Run. Yaphet Kotto, one of the great character actors of his time. And I just love how exasperated he gets at Robert De Niro stealing his badge and identity and sunglasses consistently throughout the film.
He gets so upset at Mosley.
Sure, indeed. Number three, another one I don't think many people will think about, but one that I particularly enjoy, is Gary Kingsbury, who is played by Jesse Plemons in Game Night. I really enjoy Game Night. It's a film that I feel like isn't discussed as much as it should be. It's an excellent comedy from recent years. Fantastic cast. Some incredible sequences, just incredible production design and staging and cinematography for what is ostensibly a kind of knock-around comedy. But having Jesse Plemons as like the weirdo policeman next door who wants to join in on the game night, but he's just so intense and just an upsetting presence, and no one likes to be around him since his partner died. It's a real a character that is kind of real, but funny, but scary. And Jesse Plemons walks that line so well that I love that character. Number two, it's a tie, but you're going to allow it. I know you're going to allow it because my tie, they're both played by the same character. They're both in the same movie and they both share the same body and one head that rotates around 180 degrees. It's Good Cop and Bad Cop from the Lego movie. Liam Neeson. I love the Lego movie so much. Having a good cop and bad cop in this, like utilizing the ability of Lego heads to have faces printed on the backs and the fronts with different expressions was done so well with Good Cop and Bad Cop. And then the scene where the good cop face gets wiped away with the acetone. Chilling. Truly chilling. And number one, there's only one it could have been. It's Frances McDormand. It's Marge Gunderson. It's Fargo. Another film that maybe we'll talk about someday on the show. Love Fargo. Love Frances McDormand in it. She doesn't show up to like a third of the way through the film, but as soon as she's there, she just takes over that film. She's delightful. She's taking no nonsense from anyone. I love the relationship that she and John Carroll Lynch share. It's one of my favorite on-screen marriages. John Carroll Lynch, a man I've interacted with on Twitter. And then scared away when I photoshopped his face onto Stellan Skarsgård's body in Deep Blue Sea. I didn't reply after that, as did he shouldn't. So yeah, Marge Gunderson in Fargo is my number one. Some honorable mentions, Nicholas Angel and Danny Butterman in Hot Fuzz, love them both. John C. Reilly's character from Magnolia, Officer Jim Curring, doesn't do a lot of police work, but I love that film. John Spartan from Demolition Man. Stallone, I love Demolition Man. Frank Drebin from the Naked Gun films, I reckon, will probably crop up on some people's lists, as indeed may Vincent Hanna from Heat. There is technically a Luther film, so I could have had Luther, Idris Elba as Luther, on my list, but I didn't want to do that because he's a TV guy. And if you wanted to broaden the definition of police and detectives to sheriffs, there's a little guy that's called Woody from a little film that's called Toy Story, who I feel like that's taken us beyond where it should go. In terms of top five police detectives, I could have had Officer Giggles McDimples from Toy Story 4, but I chose not to. And if we were doing worst lists or like most entertaining but shouldn't really exist, then Sheriff J.W. Pepper from Man with the Golden Gun and Live and Let Die would be on that list. An awful character who I delight watching to no end.
Thank you very much for that list, Jay. So hey, no now. Worries. We will do a segment that I'm going to have on every episode, which I'm calling State Your Motto. Now, because as we discussed at the beginning of this episode, this movie's American title is Live Free or Die Hard, which is a play on the state motto of New Hampshire. So what I decided to do is, because there are 50 states in America plus five territories, okay, which gives us a total of 55 options. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you the name of a state and give you three choices of what could be that state's motto. And you have to guess which of the three it is.
Okay. Oh, I'd like to be good at quizzes. This is going to go so badly.
Okay. So the state that I chose for you today is Virginia.
Okay. Okay. See, I'm learning today that states have mottos. That's how bad this is going to be.
Okay. So your three choices are virtue, liberty, and independence, freedom and unity, or Six Emperor Tyrannus?
Oh. I really hope it's Six Emperor Tyrannus, because that's like, that's some Sharknado.
Let me just tell you that the mottos that I'm using, you know, all three mottos are real mottos of states. It's just a question of which one is Virginia. Okay, that's the question. Sure. I'm not making up mottos here.
Sure. I predictably have no idea, and I've already forgotten the first two.
virtue, liberty, and independence, and freedom and unity. And Six Emperor Tyrannus.
I'm just gonna say the last one, Six Emperor Tyrannus, just because it sounds like the Shepherd family motto from Sharknado.
Okay, and you would be correct, Jay.
Hey. Great.
You are aware of the fact of who says that, right?
Yeah, Finn Shepherd, Iron Zuring, in all six of the films. It's how he catches out his son is really a robot in the fifth one.
It's also what John Wilkes Booth shouted out after shooting Lincoln.
Sure. And it's not, I think the shepherds say something slightly different, because like a shepherd is always prepared or something. What does Six Emperor Tyrannus actually translate to?
Thus always to tyrants.
Right. And was this Virginia's state motto before or after John Wilkes Booth assassinated Abraham Lincoln?
It is from, one second, I will tell you when it is from.
As if it's after? It's a bad sign.
No, my understanding here is that it's always. It was all the way from 1776.
Okay, that's fine then. So I feel like taking the battle cry of a would-be presidential assassin as your state motto could be read many ways.
Well, Virginia from the South, so it is. Sure. You never know. Yes, but my understanding is that it's all the way from the beginning. It's on the state seal, and it's also on the flag, which the seal was designed in 1776, and the flag they started using in the 1830s. That is the way.
But all right. In my head, it's 1776. It's how you say that date. Just because of Hamilton. That's how it will always be in my head.
Apparently. Okay. So, Jay, would you like to tell everyone where they can find Jay Cluett?
Sure. Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, is my primary online location, where my co-host Mark Hoffmeyer, friend of the show, and I, we've been through the entire Deep Blue Sea trilogy scene by scene, and at the time of recording, we're doing it again! Because we just liked doing it so much. None of this, move on to a different film. We went to Con Air, and then we'd finished Con Air, and we're like, Deep Blue Sea? And we did Deep Blue Sea again. We're having a good time going back through Deep Blue Sea scene by scene, but also talking about Deep Blue Sea adjacent films. That's films directed by Rennie Harlan. Like Long Kiss Goodnight, or featuring sharks, or aquatic action, and having a delightful time doing that. Round about when this is coming out, we're covering like the Piranha franchise, I think, which is going well so far. I don't know if it's going to end well, but we'll see.
All right, excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rap Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram, you can find me on my website, movierapminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierapminute@movierap.net. So, until tomorrow. Yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay, mother!
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one, no.